Hey guys, welcome to another episode of RevOps and ABM Alignment. Today we have a great person here, CEO and co-founder of Influ2, and proud Ukrainian also, Dmitry Lisinski. Welcome to the show, Dmitry.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dmitry, what's top of mind for you today, 2024, when we look at all this RevOps, ABM, marketing, all the crazy uncertainty that is happening in the market? What's like top of mind for you as a professional today?
Yeah, I think we started reflecting on what happened in 23 and just before that. And it feels like, it's obviously the market environment was not great, and people complained, like many people lost their jobs and lots of challenges in the industry. At the same time, I think this is pretty amazing time, as like any downturn, any tough market environment, it creates a lot of opportunity for like for the right things to happen. And we see now the outcomes of this is, and it's like, When you have like extra pressure, it's not pleasant. Obviously, it's like when your CEO challenges about your marketing spend, or when CEO challenges if you need to do these kind of things from operation standpoint, it's not a pleasant question, right? But if you answer it properly and you think deeper, this is a moment to shine, right? Because like great people had finally like appeared on the radar of top management and were able to present their great ideas that previously probably were lost in the noise of other activities. And same for tools. I think we are experiencing very good growth and a lot of interest from new customers because of this reason, right? Like people started asking the right questions about like, do we actually drive revenue? Do we drive, successful, client wins? And it's very pleasant to the fact that people ask these questions, because we always had this answer, but like I think they just were not asked enough about this, right? So this is a good time for the good people, I think, for the good operations people, for good marketing people, because now is the moment to shine, to show what have built is great, right? Yeah, so I think it's great. And also overall, in terms of market environment, it feels like the Q1 2024, clearly there's less, I would say, tension. I think many people relax and just execute their programs and build up and, invest more in things that work. And I think it's not just our sentiment, but that's what I hear from many other vendors and colleagues. So it feels like overall market environment is getting better. Hopefully we'll not jump from like tough environment to craze that we had like during the pandemic, when like people had too much money and not a lot of time to execute things. So I think this is like good time to execute great programs, but we'll see how long it's gonna last.
Yeah, so for the audience out there, and you are the founder of a great tool when it comes to ABM, person-based ads, Influ2. But before you, and actually, when I look at your LinkedIn, in 2008, when the whole economic crisis was there, you were also like co-founder and VP corporate development for a big software development company, Global Logic. And I would like to just first, before we dive into your experience, give us like a helicopter view of what Influ2 does and why is it essential part of the whole sales conversation.
Yeah, of course. I think it's good that you already provide some background. So the inspiration for Influ2 was my previous experience with GlobalLogic. And the good thing about GlobalLogic, obviously, we managed to build a very big, successful IT services business. The challenge with GlobalLogic for me personally was that, honestly, this company would be successful without any marketing effort. It was mostly, referrals and great relationships and customer referrals, but very tiny impact, if any, from marketing standpoint. And that kept me unsettled, because like I felt like I have marketing background. It feels like I didn't use what I have, what I know. I kept thinking, what could we do from a marketing standpoint to make GlobalLogic even, you know, more successful in similar companies? And by the way, currently, we actually, many of our prior competitors are our clients, like the companies like Capgemini or HCL are actually my clients now. So it's what we have built works well for my prior competitors. So the idea of Inflow2 was that, you know, like, when you think of enterprise sales, you sell into, like, you typically talk to one or two champions, people who are kind of generally interested in what you are doing. But there are 10 other people who are involved in decision making. And even to build a relation with these initial champions is very hard, right? So just prospect new connections, build this new relationship is very hard. But even further, if you think of other 10 people who are involved in decision making, and typically there are senior arrangement people, it's almost impossible to build relation with them. And then actually marketing can help salespeople do this successfully. And the idea was like, what if we just start showing ads to future champions and then to other buying group members to influence the decision-making process? So marketing could really help salespeople in their conversation because, you know, like you what marketing could do is to show, you know, case studies, show testimonials, build credibility, just explain value of the company offering while salespeople are selling, right? And that was the initial idea. We tried it for ourselves. It worked well. We offered this to our clients. And yeah, it's kind of like we see a lot of success across very different industries. And some of our clients have very short sales cycle or do only upsell. Some of our clients have like huge tickets and like multi-year sales cycles, and it works well in very different situations, very different contexts. So yes, if marketing can really drive sales pipeline and drive revenue by targeting decision makers and buying group members while salespeople are selling, and that's what essentially what we do right now.
I mean, this is fascinating that you can do the like person-based ads. Could you break it down a little bit for us to really understand how is this even possible, or what's the tech behind? Because, you know, as we talked even in our before starting, that the ABM can be a pain in the ass for RevOps guys, but for sure RevOps guys want to understand what's in the background of these type of platforms and how do they work and how does this targeting actually is possible. Actually,
it's interesting because the hardest explanation is for people who have ad tech background, because essentially what we do is not ad tech at all. It's a different technology stack. And in fact, we leverage the capability that emerged over the last 7 years across different platforms like Meta and then Google and then LinkedIn. And what they have built, and they actually were forced to build a different technology stack, is an idea that, you know, if you're an e-commerce website, you have to have a way to continue selling to your customers after the first sale. So essentially, once you have a customer base, you want to continue your, you know, extend your lifetime value and drive your lifetime value by targeting people who you already know in the way.
Yeah, like CLV, it's like critical,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So for e-commerce, the way you do it, you just connect your CRM data to Facebook or, you know, Google or LinkedIn, and you can target these people. Yeah. And then we thought, okay, this is a very first. The beauty of this thing is, it is built for like very like data privacy driven world that we live right now. Because like 10 years ago, no one cared about that stuff, right? So yeah. This set of technologies is built for data privacy. It's first party data only. Because like Facebook clearly has your consent to show ads to you, and clear Facebook knows you, right? So you willingly provided your personal information to Facebook, and you said, okay, guys, I want to use your platform. I'm okay to see ads on this platform. So we leverage that piece, it's not typical. Most IBM vendors do it differently. They rely on old school ad tech, technology stack, programmatic ad stack that I think is obsolete at this point. we leverage this kind of CRM connections, and essentially we are intermediary between our clients and the platforms, first party platforms that to who we can send CRM data and match people individually. So essentially, we just leverage different technology stack, makes for some people hard to comprehend how it might even work. But essentially, it's the same technology stack as most e-commerce platforms use these days.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a DSP, right? We're talking about...
No, that's DSP.
Yes, it's the opposite of DSP, right?
Yeah, it's opposite. We use APIs, obviously. It's not manual. But yeah, we match audiences based on CRM data, and this is kind of CRM capabilities that all our partner platforms offer. And obviously, there are two problems if you try to build this, like you can directly connect to these platforms. There are two problems. First is match rate and matching, because like the data that our clients have typically is not good enough to provide meaningful match rates. And second challenge is, and we solve that problem. Second challenge is like, make sense of the data you receive from the platform, because it's all aggregate data and you need to, you know, break it down and understand, okay, how do you leverage this data from that we receive from LinkedIn or Facebook, whatever, mm-hmm. and then attribute to specific individuals and use it as sell signals. So I think the key thing when using Futu is, okay, I know that the guy clicked on my ad, probably, because we use probabilistic model, but there's a very high probability that this guy clicked on the ad. Let's leverage this information and let's try to reach out to this guy. And by the way, based on our data, if the guy clicked on your ad yesterday and you call him, the chances the person will respond is twice bigger than if it was a cold outreach. So obviously, there's a lot of value for salespeople to leverage our signals to reach out to their prospects.
Got it. So at what point makes sense in a growth of a business? Let's say you're a Global Logic, right? Let's say. Or a similar organization where you have high ACV, you have a long sales cycle. So you need to most probably show ads to these champions that you talked about throughout the year. So you might need to show different ads depending on the value prop that you have. You need to rotate a lot the ads so then there is no ad fatigue. So at what point in a company's growth or deal value would make sense to move from a LinkedIn platform, which basically everybody does and it's easy to jump on because you just put your credit card and you can just show ads to a targeted account list, right? So at what stage this sophistication of Influtu comes in place when person-based ads would make sense?
Yeah, well, honestly, I think if you do any account-based marketing program, you can already leverage Influtu just because it becomes more precise and more actionable. So really, if you compare it to traditional IBM vendors, it's more precise because you target individuals, not, you know, accounts, right? If you think of LinkedIn, it's more actionable because LinkedIn tells you, okay, there are 10 clicks in your campaign, but you have no idea who are these people, right? In our case, you will say, okay, these are the people I need to reach out to. So once you run any ABM program, I think Influtu is a very good addition or alternative. In some cases, it could be an addition to existing program. In some cases, it could be an alternative to existing solution. But essentially, the precision that we're offering is meaningful. One important thing to understand is just to be ready for any ABM program, you have to have some, you know, maturity, right? So like ABM is not for early startups, is not for companies who are just looking for their product market fit, because you have to have repetitive sales process and some meaningful sales process before you do any ABM program. And I think that's something many people overlook, and they look for ABM, any ABM solution, just Influtu, not just Influtu, but any ABM program as a magic wand to replace poor sales process with this, hey, we will do ABM, and suddenly your horrible sales pitch will become magically much better because people will see my ads. No, it's not the case. Mm. If your sales pitch doesn't click, doesn't convert, then any marketing program would not help, right? Any marketing program amplifies what you can do from sales execution standpoint, And if your current book medium book rate is zero, then you can multiply zero by any number, is going to be zero, right? So you have to start thinking about ABM program, any ABM program, and Influent 2 is a case as well. Once you have repetitive sales or sales development process, and that, then ABM, a good ABM program can really amplify it and drive a lot of additional revenue.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I'm curious a bit about this software development audience a bit, if we can dissect that, mainly because our audience here usually is in SaaS or in software development. So these are the two groups and the dominating groups. And when we think about, at least I am based in Krakow in Poland, and if I look back at software development, it was like a huge boom 5 years ago. It was like, you know, referrals and the developers were on such a huge demand that you can, you know, they were joking that if like a plane would come over Poland and just parachute 400,000 developers next day, all of them would have jobs. I mean, literally, it was like that big of a desperation for developers, right? And today, everything flipped, like everything changed. Like there is a lot of downsizing, layoffs, and the referral, the you know, that period of El Dorado, and that you just need to have two arms and code, and clients would come in, and referrals, and I don't need to invest in marketing, I don't need to invest in sales, I just have clients. That changed a lot, right? So now these companies are looking into, let's do ABM, let's maybe hire sales, go to events, you know, like the mindset changed. And now in the past, the conversation was led by developers and they were the bosses at the table. Now it's the sales guys at the table because those developers don't have projects, right? So the things changed a lot. And nevertheless, even with very big organizations, I see that the mindset of budgets is not there, right? Because referral was zero marketing budget. But now an ABM campaign, it's like six figures type of budgets, right? We are not talking about, you know, let's fly to Web Summit and get some deals out of there with a, you know, max 10K budget with conference and hotel and everything, right? So the question that I have is that you are in both boats, let's say, right? Like you were in the global logic, you were growing with referrals, so on, but also on the corporate development, on doing ABM, understanding the programs of marketing. What are some of those steps that these companies should take in this mindset shift and also in these situations to adopt a more sophisticated marketing approach, having in mind that there is market fit, these organizations are big and mature, right?
Yeah, I think there's one huge mistake that many people make. The fact is, momentum in your go-to-market program is slower than economic shifts, right? So if you think of changes in market environment, we see cycles of 2-3 years, right? So basically we had like pandemic when suddenly everyone expected to go, economy will go down. Suddenly it went up because there was a lot of extra, you know, investment from essentially printed money, right? So governments printed money to support the economies. And then we have currently like cool down over the last 2 years. And then I think now it's like, macro environment is picking up, but it can go down again like in a year or two based on different macro factors, right? And then a good go-to-market program is something you have to build over years, right? Like it's not something you can, like even if you think of basic stuff like SEO, content marketing, that's not something you can turn it on and off, right? So you have to build it up over time. And if you think of brand awareness, it's even worse, right? It takes years to build brand awareness. So it's like I think the cores of any go-to-market strategy should remain of like intact. It doesn't matter if it's great market environment or bad market environment. And you have to think strategically even when the market is really bad. And if you haven't done so, now is the time to do it, right? So there's no moment when you don't want to do strategic marketing. Yes, you might want to allocate less resources when you lack resources, right? But you never stop doing this, right? So like you do what you can afford to do right now, and you never stop thinking about it or designing your go-to-market program or refining your go-to-market. So maybe the scale or the focus could shift a little bit based on where you are in macro cycle. So I think, yeah, I remember actually 2008 was a very good example. And honestly, I think the impact was bigger. I think the shock was bigger, but the rebound was faster if you compare it to current situation. Mm-hmm. So I think the shock was much more significant because huge banks were on the verge of bankruptcy, and that could collapse the whole economy easily. And then the response to this threat was like huge. Like every organization, every meaningful business, they just put everything slammed on brakes and just said, okay, we should wait, we should preserve cash, we should cut all our meaningful expenses and just survive. And then it really is like 3-4 months after, it turned out that okay, it doesn't look that bad. And many, I would say that even back in GlobalLogic times, as far as I remember, our growth was like even positive in 2009. I think it was lower than in previous years, but it was positive. So now I think it's kind of different type of cycle. It feels like the shock, the afterwave of the pandemic. I mean, okay, there was like Fed increased their interest rates, and it was kind of slower shock, and the response was slower. Many companies did not realize what's happening initially, but then as the economy started slowing down, everyone started feeling, okay, it looks like there's less demand on our services and we need to compete to get new clients, stuff like this. Now and the rebound is slower as well, right? So like we don't feel it's so quick as it was in 2009. But nevertheless, we talk about really it's like 2-3 years of the cycle, right? And you just want to build your program for 20. If you think of, again, like strategic marketing, SEO, that kind of stuff, content marketing, you build your foundation now to be successful in 25, 26, right? When the market will rebound again. So I think, and that does not, I mean, I think many, especially when you talk to investors, they're also very, very affected by these ideas, and they are very vocal about, hey, we need to preserve. And this is relevant for many startups, because when you listen to this venture capital advice, this advice is addressed to people, to companies who burn tens of millions of cash every month, or millions of cash at least, right? So these companies are doomed in a bad market environment, and they need to start preserving cash, which is not relevant for most services companies, right? So services companies, software development companies, they never had this luxury of burning so much cash. The way you think about strategic marketing, yes, you don't want to be super strategic or do crazy things now, hoping that they will pay off 3 years from now, but you have to establish foundation now to be successful in 3 years. And it's never too early, or you can postpone it. You have to do it now.
And if you want to do it now, is strategic marketing for these companies, what are those initial hiring positions that you see that are critical?
From people's standpoint?
Yeah.
Well, I think you hire people for this, for the initiatives.
You
hire people for the initiatives, right? You don't hire people and then think, okay, what these people should do, right? You first think what you want to do, and then you hire people to do the things you want to do. And again, many people look, especially for smaller companies who were successful over the last couple of years, and suddenly they realize, okay, we need to do marketing now to be successful. I think they all look for some growth hacks. I think growth hack is a very bad word, because it creates an illusion that, hey, there's something that you don't know and suddenly you can become very successful. And yes, there are some cases or examples of, yay, I found this kind of nice thing, it worked. but really it's like it will stop working one day because everyone will adopt it if it works. So whatever you find, whatever the growth hack you will find, it never lasts forever and never. Yes, it can change your business model at some moment, but you still have to do a lot of boring, tedious job to be successful and then look for these potential growth opportunities. So, and again, the list of initiatives remains the same. You have to build brand awareness in your target accounts if you sell to large accounts, right? Which is the whole idea of ABM is about it, right? But you don't want to hire an ABM manager to do this. You first want to understand, okay, how do you execute your ABM program? And there's a lot of things you can do it without any new people, right? So you can think of the program initially, okay, what I can do from ABM standpoint with my current team. And then, okay, probably it's not enough. We want to have extra resources. Same for any inbound programs, like again, content marketing or you can do, demand gen or whatever. Like any program, you start with like, okay, this is our strategy. This is how we approach the market. We want to go large companies or we want to go mid-market. It's good, big decision, right? You had to make the decision ahead. What verticals we want to target? What do we already have? Do we have enough content to support this process? Or we need to start with like talking to our customers and creating case studies first? Or do we even have this capability in our team? Because some companies, they build materials ahead of their capabilities and then they look for, for software development companies. It's totally fine. You can do this. You can be careful. You have to be careful about this kind of approach, but it's possible.
Maybe you hire later. Yeah, that's the idea for software
but
development.
You start with like, okay, what's your strategy? What's your initiatives? And it's like, it's not, you don't buy the strategies from McKinsey, right? You don't buy from consultants. It's all very down to the earth, very practical strategies. Look what worked. Let's expand what works well. Here's a new thing you want to try to do. Let's allocate some effort and see how it works. And then you hire people to basically execute the strategies.
So it's a very strategy driven, and then it's more like self-awareness, right? Like you need to really internalize this as a board and as a organization, a C-level.
Yeah.
Before you even start to, and you said there's something important that you cannot buy it from McKinsey or from Boston Consulting Group. But how do I, if I am a software development company, I'm going for enterprise, I was doing enterprise, and I want to expand it more, but I don't have the competencies internally, right? So I don't have anyone who did this before, because we were all tech people and we were all, again, growing our referrals. So what should I do, me as a tech founder, tech CEO? Because I don't have this background, right? Should I hire someone strategically on this, or because consulting is not okay, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the thing about consulting is, I think consulting companies are successful in verticals where there's like very repetitive business where they accumulated a lot of expertise.
Yeah.
Like if you do, like coal mining, right? So there's like 100 years of expertise of doing coal mining. And this industry does not, there are some trends and it transforms as well, but very slowly. So these guys can accumulate knowledge from one company to share it with other companies. And they did a lot of stuff.
Subject matter challenge expertise,
with tech is like, techs move so quickly that any advice that was good 10 years ago or 5 years ago is not good anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole environment changes and it's also very fragmented, right? So like, even like if you think of services companies, there are very different types of services companies, different types of services you can offer different markets. It's not one-fit-all solution, right? So you have to design your own strategy. And then, I think one thing that many people underappreciate is the fact you already have customers and expertise, technical expertise, is your very core background. It's like for product companies, is your product, right? So it's funny.
Mm.
We had this actually very interesting conversation recently with my marketing team. Is like when you think of strategy and you think, hey, we can position this way, we can position that way, we can, you know, we can talk about one aspect, another aspect. It's very easy to forget that you have the core product that does exactly what it does. And if you make a decision, probably you want to do something differently, it will take years to build it, right? So the foundation is the product you have, right? So if you produce Coca-Cola, you can talk about love, right? Or you can talk about, you know, good mood or whatever. You can talk about very high level stuff, but the essence of what you're doing is you're producing a soft drink, right? With caffeine and sugar in it, right? And that's the reason why you can talk about fun or anything is just because when people drink this drink, they have sugar and caffeine coming into their blood, right? And if you apply the same strategy to a banking product, probably it wouldn't work because like money is a different feeling or banking relationship is very different, right? So you cannot disconnect your marketing program from your product completely, right? So you have to connect to what you have. And I think for services, it's much easier, right? So for services, you know exactly what you're doing. You know why your clients are successful and why they're happy working with you. And that's a very strong foundation for your any marketing program. Then the question is like, how do you talk about this? And how do you deliver this message? How do you spread this message to your target audience? I think that's where you need to have marketing people. Okay, probably I have happy customers that talk about my current, you know, we had some great case studies with them, but no one have seen these case studies, right? So it's like, if people knew what we did for this customer X, everyone like from that industry would want to work with us, right? Let's think how we can spread this word. And that's not complicated. It's just, you don't need to have like 10 years of marketing to come up with some good ideas how you can actually execute this.
If you have the customer insights, for sure, because you really know your customer.
So the foundation is what you have done successfully and the happiness of your customer and the service you did. And by the way, actually, even in very large services companies, essentially, they don't have salespeople. So the job or like the way salespeople operate in product companies, because when you think of services, the moment when you have your delivery manager or like you can call it differently, project manager to step in and have an actual conversation with your customer is very early, right? The earlier you make it happen is the better, because the best feeling for any customer, and the customer is also an engineer. So like engineer, making sure this one engineer from a customer talks to your engineer. The earlier it happens is the better, because when they talk, they just connect. They like each other, or they don't like each other, right? So, and again, like it's good because you don't waste your time. So the earlier the moment, this moment happens is the better, because essentially, it's just one person trusts to another person, one engineer trusts to another engineer. It's like, even if you think of huge companies, back in my experience, that was like, it was always about like one past engineer who's currently VP of your customer talking to your VP who is actually an engineer. And then they talk in their own language and they understand each other. So I think that's genuinely what it is about. And everyone else, like salespeople, marketing people, just, you know, help to happen, this thing to happen, and, you know, try to connect those people together.
Yeah, more like facilitators. And you touched a really good point, is that there is a very thin line between if you create a program, right? Like between what marketing does and also what needs to be really strategically done and decided by the C-level. Because in many cases, this whole ABM or the whole program is considered to be a marketing thing. The marketing team or the ABM team needs to decide what are the programs that we would run. But at the end of the day, it's a strategic decision, because you have the mid-market, the corporate market. You need to select very carefully the TAL, right? So you need to be very, very strategic in who are those companies that you go after and with, again, what capabilities. So even before we talk about messaging, even before we talk about value prop or anything like that, you need to decide these very important things like mid-market or up-market, and who are the companies that we go after. And again, the capabilities, as you mentioned. So because of this decision cannot be made by the marketing team. These decisions are communicated to the marketing teams, right? So many times when I do marketing, ABM strategies, this is the biggest challenge at the beginning that they face, that the whole, you know, the mindset of the decision maker that, let's say, hired us would be, okay, so you are marketing guy, you talk to this marketing guy, and you guys do an ABM strategy. And then when we dive deeper into questions, then we are blocked because you're like, okay, but I don't know if we should go for these geos, or I don't know if these are the best, if this is the best vertical. Yes, we have case studies in this vertical, but is it the company's strategy that in 2024 we are going after financial institutions or after retail or after whatever other vertical, right? What about our subject matter experts? Do we have the engineers in place? Are they leaving? Are they still in the organization? Do we have some really strong subject matter expertise internally that could speak at gigs, go to podcasts, have be the thought leader of the space, right? So I think you mentioned it really clearly that, guys, let's figure this out first, and then marketing is just facilitating. What I was wondering is why we got here. Like, why is it the name misleading, this idea of ABM, like account-based marketing, or why is it not that much involvement from the C-level into this type of strategic decisions?
Well, I guess the misconception comes, I think the reason why it's so hard for C-level people or for marketing people actually to prioritize things properly is that actually the traditional marketing, when you think of consumer marketing or even like B2B when it comes to like volume and velocity type of SMB-focused B2B business or product-led growth businesses, is a very different strategy and different approach to what you see when you sell to enterprises. And I think a lot of ideas spill from that mindset that are wrong. And the problem about this is, like, when you think about, you know, like consumer marketing is in the driving seat, right? So marketing defines, you know, okay, actually marketing designs products, right? So element of product design is the marketing side. Then marketing's job is to launch advertising, run, you know, marketing campaigns, bring people to build awareness so that when people come to supermarkets, they buy the product.
Yeah.
And once, actually, I had this experience in consumer marketing in my prior life. And once you turn it off, you instantly have your sales hit. And typically, it's very sales is driven by advertising or marketing campaigns.
Mm.
And same for PLG products. It's like if you think of products like Zoom, like any even B2B products that are... Yeah, QuickBooks it's very marketing driven, right? So you have to have this funnel, you have to generate leads convert, right? And it's very connected to product marketing to product conversation. When you try to apply the same mindset to enterprise driven environment, that's where it fails. And that's, I think, where I struggled when I actually came from consumer marketing background straight into enterprise selling in GlobalLogic. And that was, but it was very hard for me to comprehend what even happening here, why it's like how even you can use what I know about marketing in this environment. And I think the thinking of the marketing people in enterprise sales organizations is like, they should admit this is a sales-driven process. It can be driven by engineering teams. It can be driven by salespeople. But essentially, it is driven by people who actually close deals, sell to large customers. And it takes time. It's a slow process. And then the best starting point for you is not to strategize and think, okay, what's my market and how you think about the market, like, and do all the strategic marketing exercises you would normally do for consumer businesses. the best starting point for you is just to not think about it at all and just go and ask your sales or development people, what's your current problem? What are you doing right now? What's your current focus and what is the biggest problem for you right now? And they would normally hear something like, okay, I don't have enough sales opportunities. I don't have enough new deals coming or new prospects coming into my pipeline. And the next question would be, okay, how are you getting these prospects? Where are they coming from? And then, and what are the good prospects, by the way, for you? Because like, it's very easy for marketing people to book a lot of meetings with wrong people, right? And yeah, we've seen this a lot of times. So what are the good prospects and where they're coming from? And let's try to focus on that. And it could be, instead of doing an ABM, you can suddenly realize probably you should do a referral program.
Yeah.
Or customer
demand generation program. Right.
Yeah, and it's going to be a quick win for you because it's like it's easy to execute and it's kind of straightforward, and that's what your salespeople crave. So I'm like, we're an ABM platform, but I'm telling you, hey, probably you don't need ABM at this point. And likewise, it's like they say, okay, we do prospecting ourselves right now, and people don't respond to me, right? I write on LinkedIn, I call people, they just don't respond. My response rate is very low, and it's very hard to get to them. Okay, probably you need the ABM program, right? So you can build awareness, and whenever you call a person, the person will respond to you because they know you.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of the thinking that you can execute. So I think it's just, but again, like when you think of your ACP, okay, don't strategize. Look at what your salespeople are, who your salespeople selling to already. Look at your happy customers. That's a good answer to any strategy like this.
Yeah, that's a lot of foundational things I think that needs to be solved before we jump in into ABM. So Dimitri, thanks a lot for this quick conversation. I know that we are getting to our mark. Can you help us a bit understand where can we find you? What are some resources that you are recommending to the people when it comes to ABM?
Well, honestly, I think every ABM and sales engagement vendor does a very good job in just promoting this idea. I think we are all kind of pioneers that I think there are a lot of like the whole conferences talking about IBM and stuff like this, but still there's a lot of misconceptions, and this kind of novel concept to the level that really it was around like for 15 years, and 15 is almost nothing for when you think of marketing. So I guess I was actually, we're trying to find, okay, what's the best B2B marketing book or best ABM book?
Yeah.
And I don't think it exists, right? It's just too early. And I think it will evolve dramatically in the future as we learn, because it's kind of new discipline. So I think the best way to approach it is just to see my marketing team does a pretty good job in terms of talking how do you execute the different programs and what works, what doesn't work. And we try to share not just, you know, like observations, but also some data analysis and across that we do across different clients and share what works, what doesn't work for our clients. And similarly, many of other ABM vendors and sales engagement platforms and like guys like SalesLoft and Outreach and Clary, and they all talk about, you know, and it's like, one important thing is it's not just about marketing. ABM is about sales, right? So I think, and sales engagement platforms probably, honestly, if I had to choose, I would rather read what Clary writes about this or what Outreach, for example. So I think because marketing and sales are very well connected when it comes to ABM, and I think you have to listen to both parties, like guys who are executing marketing programs and guys who are executing sales engagement and sales programs. But anyway, I think it's a very interesting topic. And by the way, there are a lot of conferences that are also dedicated to, okay, how do you execute different B2B marketing programs that I would recommend.
I think B2B Sales and Marketing Exchange is one of them, for sure.
Yeah.
The Pavilion also has.
Yeah, we were present at B2B MX, B2B SMX since 2018, mm-hmm. I guess, 18. So
yeah,
it's still a very good conference. Lots of great case studies. And again, like, the great thing about this conference, and similarly, it's like other conferences like this as well, is just the place where you can go and see actual marketers did some programs and sharing what they did and how it worked. And that's just the best way to learn is just to listen to your colleagues and talk to them. Actually, you can then, you know, stop by and talk to people and ask, okay, how it worked, honestly. Are you happy about the program? What would you do differently? That kind of stuff. So it's very easy to connect to people and ask questions. So, you know, and that's something you can never do when you just read someone's content. Well, you can ask questions on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, because it's changing so fast. So you need a community, right? Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for all this. And I think all of us, we learned a lot of great nuggets from you. And
thanks for having me. It was helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thanks, bye.